Welcome to the Whole Equestrian Podcast, where we're bridging the gap between riding and wellness, discussing topics related to mindset, fitness, nutrition, and community. Our mission is to promote health and happiness through our love of horses. I'm Dr. Tyler Held, a certified mental performance consultant with my doctorate in sport and performance psychology, serving mostly the equestrian community. I am a retired five-star groom, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu purple belt and gym owner, a lifelong learner, and a lover of all things. So really excited to bring you guys today's guest. Natasha Wilch is someone that I connected with via a podcasting group, and she is all about brain health. As you guys know, concussions are kind of a given. If you ride horses, you're going to fall off and hit your head at some point, sad but true. So I really think that her conversation brings something to everyone. She talks about some preventative brain health stuff, some information on concussions, and I learned a lot, actually. So I think the last concussion I had was actually in college when I had taken a bad fall. And a lot of the information and the protocols that I knew from that time have changed and still might not be mainstream to other practices. So again, very excited to jump into this conversation, and I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did. All right, I am here with Natasha today. Natasha, can you tell me a little bit about who you are, why you're here, how you got started in your career field, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so I'm going to try and keep that short because I can ramble for ages, but I'm super stoked to be here. Thank you for having me. So those that don't know, so my name is Natasha Wilch. So I am a I always say technically I'm a physical therapist, but my love and passion and everything I do in my businesses is centered around concussion. My big mission is to elevate and evolve the culture and concussion around the world, which means improving advocacy, education, and treatment for people that have this invisible diagnosis. So I own a brick and mortar clinic in Western Canada, in Nanaimo, BC specifically. And so I am blessed to have people fly in from all over the world to come work with me in my concussion intensive rehab program. I do online programs for people with concussion as well, both free and paid. And then I have a 6-month clinical mentorship program that I educate other clinicians around the world in teaching them how to rehab concussion as well. So it is everything that I do in every aspect of my business is this mission and this passion around concussion education, awareness, and treatment.
Did you get into that? Usually, I always say research is usually me search. Like, do you have a personal story that ties into the concussions?
Yeah. You know, what's funny though, is I don't think I realized it until after I dove down the rabbit hole with 2 feet. So I went into neurological physiotherapy as a new grad. And that kind of inspiration came from my cousin who'd been in a dirt biking accident and became a quadriplegic. And then when my ex-husband and I moved to Nanaimo, I opened a clinic, because there was no one to serve the neuro population. And literally, there was an occupational therapist who had a client. This was like back in 2017 now, I think, at this point. She had a client who wasn't recovering from concussion. And her thought process was, well, concussion affects the brain, and Natasha's the neurophysio, so let's send her to Natasha. I was heavily treating stroke, Parkinson's, and spinal cord at that moment in my career. A concussion is not any of those. Yep. And so I'd actually said to the client, I said, you know, I am going to be very honest and transparent. This is new to me. And I'm not really sure what to do, but if you're willing to learn, or if you're willing to work with me, I'm willing to learn. And I always giggle because I'm like, I'll never forget. Like, I remember what she looks like. I remember her name. I always giggle. So I'm sure she stayed because she had nowhere else to go. But that opened the door. Like, I enrolled in my first course 2 days later. And I dove down the rabbit hole and never looked back. And it was funny because I'd done a lot of different things in the physio space, but like this lit a fire in me like no tomorrow. And then when I thought back to it, when I was 17, my dad had a brain injury. So a log had rolled off the back of a truck and landed on his head. And so my family for several years went through our own trials and tribulations with brain injury. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 17 because of it. And so I think this now it's like, this was like that spark of then. And I don't ever want anyone to experience what my dad went through, as well as what my family went through in the process of trying to heal from this brain injury. But I mean, that was 20 some odd years ago now. That shows how old I am. You didn't rehab stuff back. You didn't rehab concussions and brain injuries back then.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of where a gist of it. And today, honestly, today the passion and inspiration continues because of the work of my clients, right? So I always say I high five, I happy dance, and I cry in the clinic. Like, but it's the emails that I get of the clients who they go home after our intensives and say, like, I could play with my 3-year-old son again. Or the email I get of someone standing beside a big rig being like, I never thought I'd be able to do this again, and here I am. Or I never thought I'd be able to have a family, and I'm like, I'm pregnant. Right. So now it's, although my dad's story may have been what like was my initial fuel and fire, today it's the people I get to work with who are both on a journey, and then the clinicians I get to mentor who are like, you're never going to guess this win my client had. And I'm like, that's because of you and like the work you're doing with them. And so now it's my clients and both clinicians and people on a journey that keep me going.
Yeah, no, and I'm honestly so grateful to connect with you today because I've gotten the opportunity as a mental performance coach to work on the fear side of things with concussion patients. And like, I always have the conversation of like, what are you doing with your physical therapist? Like, what's happening there, and blending that into the work, because like, sometimes you get someone that's just legitimately pushing themselves too hard after they've had a brain injury. And that's where, you know, I'm sure our listeners are already, their ears are pretty, if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably had a concussion falling off. But that, I mean, it is a bit the reality, and there's so many layers to like what's neurophysically going on as well as what's psychologically going on. So I can't wait to sort of deepen the conversation. But before we get there, because this is an equestrian podcast, I would love to hear if you do have any horse experiences in your history.
Yeah, so I love horses. I've loved them since I was a kid. We never had our own, but I grew up in the country, in this place called Bull River is where I grew up.
Yep.
And so my friends had horses. And so literally I'd be like, Mom, I'm going to go play with my friend. And I was like, but literally I would go because I wanted to ride horses. And so her mom is who taught me how to ride. And so I've tried English once. I hated it. So I only ever rode Western. And she taught me to ride on this little pony and his name was Midnight. And so Midnight was like my little pony that I got to ride all over the place. And then there was another woman in that area. So this area was like full of horseback riders. And so she taught us how to, and like we had like a ring. And so she would teach us how to barrel race a little bit too, which was super fun. But I was never strong enough to do it my own saddle. And I remember one time we were going on a ride because we basically rode every weekend. And my horse started trotting and it was very bumpy. And my saddle started falling sideways like it does.
Yep.
And I just like held on for dear life and then like dragged my feet along the ground until I finally let myself go. but I didn't ride for years then. And then when we moved to the island, I found myself craving it. There's something around being a horse. Like there's just something about being around a horse.
Yep.
Especially a good natured horse. I like the ones that are good natured. And I found a trail riding company here up in Nanaimo, or they were in Parksville. And so I'd reached out and I was like, are you still doing rides? And so I'd gone on a couple trail rides, and then there was one weekend I'd booked in, and usually there was me and a bunch of other strangers that went. But I was the only one who'd booked in. And so my guide took me, and on these trail rides, I guess for liability reasons, they're not supposed to let you go any faster than a trot. Yeah. And I would much rather transition into a canter because it's much more comfortable and more fun. And because I was the only one, the guide took me on a completely different path too than we normally went on. And she made the comment, she's like, you know, she's like, you're a decent rider. And I was like, thank you. I'm like, I'm gonna take that compliment. And she had asked me, she was like, do you want to go faster? And I said, yes, please. And we were in this beautiful, like, wide open field. So a few years ago now. And we just like broke the horses into a canter. And it was, oh, it was just, it was one of the best feelings I'd had in a really long time. Yeah, I honestly have nothing but positive. I have memories where I was like freaking terrified, like going down a mountain on a horse, the two that I'm just like, but those aren't fun ones. But yeah, that was my last, like, that was a couple years ago now. That was my last, like, beautiful, like, really fun memory with it. But
I love it. Yeah, no, and honestly, like I used to be like really competitive in the equestrian space, and now that I like do my sports psychology, my horses are just like joy, and like exactly what you said of just being able to canter through like a big open field. It's just that moment of like connection and feeling wonderful. So I'm glad that you can share that with us and our listeners. And you know, give you a little street cred among our equestrians here, you know, that you've been on the back of a horse. Not that you had to be, like honestly, I was looking forward to this conversation either way, but I do
but I
like that.
have been, so bonus points.
Bonus points. Well, with that being said, I would love to like just talk about like what actually it is that you do. Like, how do you manage concussions? What are the protocols? Like, what does your practice and education look like?
That's a big answer. So I'm going to break it
Break
into
it.
some break into
Yep.
some components. So there is absolutely an education perspective. So whether that is we go, whether it's virtually or in person, and whether that's we're going into sport organizations or schools, or like I'm going into a hospital next week, to educate on what a concussion is, what that looks like, how you assess those parts of pieces. So there's absolutely an education and an awareness piece, particularly in the sport realm. It's more how do you identify a concussion? And then what are your first steps? So there's definitely this education component of what we do for sure. Me personally, the second layer of that education and mentorship component is mentoring the therapists that I mentor to teach them how to rehab concussion. So that would be kind of the pre stuff. If you experience a concussion, then I do in the clinic, we do assessment and treatment from acute all the way to persistent. So my clinic is a team of physical therapists, athletic therapists, kinesiologists, clinical counselors, occupational therapists, and speech paths. And so really it's about supporting that person from day zero to wherever they need to be. A concussion doesn't necessarily heal in 3 days, right? It can take months to years for some people to recover. No one wants to hear that, but it is the truth. So we need to be aware of it. So then it's that piece. And so, like I said, my team supports mostly the local community, and I support people who fly in from elsewhere in my concussion intensive week. So my concussion intensive week is a week intense with me on the rehab piece. So when you're coming to work with us in our clinic, or like with me specifically in the clinic, we are absolutely doing what's called a multi-systems assessment of the neurophysiology. So for I'm kind of backpedaling a little bit here. Concussion has different profiles, right? So it's a diffuse injury. It doesn't just affect one part of the brain, and it has different profiles. So it can affect your vestibular system, your visual system, your neck, how you process sensory information, your moods and your personalities, headaches, and your cognition. So how you think. It can affect one, it can affect all seven. So my job when you come into my clinic is to assess each of those areas to determine what's working well, what's not working well, and how are they speaking well and not well together. And then from there, we build you an individualized, very specific rehab plan. And then we treat for a week, we reassess, and then build you a home program. And then we support you virtually for 3 months. So that's very specifically the neurophysiology component to it. I take a very holistic approach to concussion. So then we also are looking at what else, what are your other habits? Like what's happening with your sleep? What's happening with your nutrition? What's happening with your movement? What's your mindset like? Do we have a past trauma history that needs to be looked at and addressed in that piece of things there? So, and then I also, it just me personally love to speak and educate and bring awareness and all these pieces too. So kind of big picture, that is what I do in this space of concussion.
Yeah, no, very cool. And then with the actual like clinic, is that prescribed exercises all physical? Is there some mental at component, like brain training to it? It's been a
So
while
it's
since I've
all,
been coaching.
yeah. So it's all brain training.
Okay.
But that's where the assessment comes in. So what we're doing in that assessment is we're figuring out, is this more of a cognitive issue? What's happening with the vestibular system? What's happening with the visual system? And then it's absolutely specific exercises geared to the person to help them heal and recover. Sometimes I just recorded a podcast about this yesterday, actually. You see change in the thing without actually treating the thing. So what do I mean by this? One of the biggest things that shows up that people struggle with in after concussion, that is probably the most scary to them, I think, is when their memory starts to become an issue,
Yep.
or their ability to do cognitive things, right? So memory sequencing, that sort of stuff. Your people's default might be to do some cognitive rehabilitation and start like doing brain games on an app and that sort of thing, right? Except there's deeper layers to that, because there's other systems that impact those things. So for an example, your autonomic nervous system, if it's dysregulated for significant periods of time, research has shown affects cognition. Your vestibular system, if there's challenges with your vestibular system, that affects your ability for emotional regulation and sequencing tasks and cognition. So my job is to assess somebody and figure out what's the foundational pieces that I need to have in place that then domino effect into these other systems. I just had a client who was here who one of the reasons for chronic dizziness can sometimes be you don't know where your head is in space. But you don't necessarily have to treat the neck to treat that. And so it's understanding how the intricacies in these systems integrate together to have change in these other things.
Yeah, no, and it's like I said, for my filter, the last time I had a concussion, I think was 2011, and they, sent me, and they're like, don't look at screens, don't read, like just be in a dark room. So I'd
All the outdated advice.
be outdated.
I feel like we should just squash concussion myths for a second. Can we do that?
Let's do that because I feel like that's what I'm operating on is like
Yeah. So those
the
are all old. Those are
okay.
all myth.
Okay.
Okay. So biggest myth, you do not need to hit your head to have a concussion. Oh,
Okay.
sorry. So that is the correct answer. So the myth is you have to hit your head. That is incorrect. You
Okay.
do not need to hit your head to have a concussion. It can go anywhere on the head, neck, body, whatever. It's that the force is transmitted to the head that causes this acceleration, deceleration injury. Okay. Myth, you have to lose consciousness. Wrong. Less than 10% of people actually lose consciousness that have a concussion. Okay. Rest until your symptoms go away. That is a myth and very outdated. At this point in time, we want people to rest for the first 24 to 48 hours, and then we need to gradually start to reintroduce them to certain activities. We actually know now that if you have prolonged rest, as in like if you're living in a dark room forever, which was the old advice too, you're setting yourself up for a longer recovery. We don't want to do that. Once your symptoms go away, your brain is healed. That is a myth. Okay. So with concussion, particularly acute concussion, your symptoms can resolve in as few as 2 to 3 days. A good number of people's symptoms, I'm going to say 50 to 60% of people will resolve within 10 days. But we know that metabolically, so chemically within the brain and everything that's happened, that can take up to a month to actually fully heal. So just because symptoms have disappeared does not mean that your brain is yet fully recovered. Those are the big myths. Rest is best. No. All you can do is wait. Wrong. It's truly at this point in time, if you experience a concussion, rest for 24 to 48 hours. Then ideally within that first week, connect with a concussion clinician. Because the research supports heavily now that those who connect with a concussion-specific clinic or clinician sooner have faster recovery times. And that's because we can figure out which subtype of concussion you have, and we can guide you appropriately and specifically in your recovery.
So then, do you feel like doctors are actually on board with then referring to you and places like you? Or is that most people find you through the self-guided, I'm going to take control of my own healing?
Great question. Only because I just did a presentation in this, and there's actually statistics on it. And I'm trying to remember what those stats are now. Hold on. Hold on. I actually have a number that I can share with you,
I love that.
which is kind of fun. So this, yeah, where is it? Here we go. Nope, that's not the right one. It's like 30. Hold on. This is the joys of reporting.
The joke is that what 60% of statistics are completely made up. So we're getting the real statistic here.
That's funny. Where the frick is it? Here we go. Okay. I found these stats as I was doing a presentation and I was like, ooh. And there are reasons why I think some of these myths are perpetuating because people aren't informed, right? So it was in a recent study that looked at family medicine residents. And was surveying them with diagnosis and management on knowledgeable questions about concussion. They answered them with only 58% accuracy.
Oh my gosh.
And then they again surveyed about they, so they surveyed family physicians or like primary care physicians. Are you in the US or Canada?
I'm in the US.
Okay, so like PCPs, emergency room physicians, nurse practitioners, and they found that only 37% made appropriate return to play recommendations based on established guidelines.
Wow.
So the misinformation, and then the other piece, hold on, there's one more. The study blew my mind. I was like, no wonder. Because we were always asking, why is such crappy information being given? This is why. And then one of the summaries from the study was that overall, the front, like those front healthcare practitioners, they feel confident in the diagnosis of TBI, but they are not utilizing and referring to referral sources. So, a lot of people, I've done a lot, like I purposely like try to continuously reach out to our physicians in the community so they know who we are so that we do get these referrals. So, we do have a good number that come through physicians, but most people, it's through self-awareness and education or someone's told them that it's something they should do or they should connect with us. So we do absolutely need to increase that awareness. And I think when we look at the medical system as well, people instinctively think that the first person I should see is a physician. In case of a concussion, I mean, yes, yeah, see your PCP, but they're not going to be the ones that are the most updated usually, and they're not going to be the ones who have the ability to guide you and give you those specific rehab pieces. It really is connecting with, usually, I'm going to say a physical therapist or a chiropractor, or an athletic therapist. I say, you hear me say concussion clinician a lot because there isn't just one profession that does this.
And then would you say that that's something that also is important, like at a mild, when they'll give you the mild concussion label, like do you have any input on the severity levels of concussion and
Yeah.
then moving
It
forward from
doesn't
that?
exist anymore.
It doesn't.
So
Okay.
we do not, so we no longer, and there's a reason. So we no longer grade concussions as a mild, moderate, or severe concussion. So
Okay.
that doesn't exist
Awesome.
anymore. It used to. When you had your concussion, it absolutely did,
In
right?
2011.
Yeah, it totally did. Today we no longer do that. And we don't do that for a few reasons. One, that depending on where you read in the research, some research will say that that actually doesn't, it's a not an indication that someone may or may not develop persistent symptoms. There's other research that shows that the more severe the concussion is, the longer the recovery might be, but that's not always the case. So we don't do mild, moderate, severe concussion anymore. We don't grade it in that way. But all concussion is considered a mild traumatic brain injury.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, so far I've got if you hit your head, find your own resources and your own like care path forward, look up those clinician centers and stuff like that. Is there anything people can do on the front end of the brain health spectrum before a concussion has happened?
That's a good question. It's one of those things that the better health we're in to begin with, the likely more better we're going to fare after, right? So I'm a huge advocate of just doing whatever we can to optimize our health. So are we doing aerobic conditioning? Have you ever just like actually gone to someone who does assess, like a PT who assesses brain function to see what your baseline is? And upon that baseline, if things show up that could be improved for function or neural performance, do you take that opportunity to do that? Because the better functioning our brain is prior to an injury, then and our health is prior to an injury, and the more regulated our nervous system is prior to an injury, and the less inflammation in our body prior to injury, the better we're going to fare after an injury. So truly, I think it comes back to, I think in society today, we're such a reactive species. We change our habits once something bad has happened. So let's flip that script and let's take care of ourselves now and do the things we need to do now and the mental performance stuff we need to do now and the mindset performance stuff we need to do now to put us in an optimal place just to help us function as a high-performing human. That should something happen, we have ourselves in the best place possible before then.
Absolutely. That goes along with the whole message that we have here, right? Your familiarity with equestrians might not, the lifestyle is a lot of the times very grueling, very taxing. People work very long hours. People put a lot more money, effort, and energy into their horses than they do themselves. And they'll have a nutritionist for their horse and a body worker for their horse, and then they won't do that for them. Like they hey, like I had the acupuncturist out 3 times this week, and I'm having my Diet Coke and my Doritos just to get through the day. And so it's definitely something that we as a podcast and as
Yeah.
have been trying to change, but obviously then you have this population that is getting a higher instance of traumatic brain injury and concussion because of the risk involved with it. And most of the time people are, let me get right back on the horse, right? So being able to convince someone in this field to actually take it seriously and take care of themselves is very difficult.
I've heard that about equestrians. I've heard. And I think it comes back to this question of, and again, this is fully my lack of knowledge about this area. But we're doing all of these things for our horses to help them perform better, correct? You and your horse are a team. The horse can't run the race, do the barrels, do the jumps, whatever else happens in an equestrian competition. Without you on their back. Horses sense you. They sense your feelings, they sense your energy, they sense everything about you. So amazing that you're doing all these lovely things for your horse. But if you aren't doing the things for you, whether it be nervous system regulation, whether it be your own mindset, your own nutrition, which that nutrition is going to factor into your strength, hugely factor into your strength, and your and then and taking care of things for your own balance and your own performance. This is going to sound really harsh. You're limiting the performance of your horse
It's
because you're not.
harsh in a good way, because that's how people will respond. Like they want to do everything for their horse. So being able to justify the needs of your brain and your own self through the horse is actually, I think, a way to get through to people.
Yeah, crazy. But that's how I would look at it. It's like if I would say when it's the equivalent of when I'm looking at when I'm talking to therapists of if you have this huge passion to change people's brains and to help them heal, but if you don't take care of yourself, you can't show up for those people to do what you love to do. So, like that doesn't work. You being burnt out doesn't serve people. As a competitor or in the equestrian world, you not being able to be grounded and regulated and have strength to be able to position yourself on that horse and encourage the most out of that horse and make sure that horse stays regulated because you're regulated, you're limiting that horse's performance. So how does that help either of you?
Just doesn't. You're speaking to me, and I'm like, yes, but I know there's people listening to it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're absolutely not the case. And I feel again like that brain health is such a big thing that I see again the How quickly can I get back on my horse is the first answer. And I know, have you worked with equestrians? Are you allowed to say? I know that's usually
Yeah, no,
like.
you can ask anything. So I haven't worked with equestrians professionally, but I'll say that mentality is across all sport. Right? So I live in the Pacific Northwest. So I work a lot with junior hockey players. And then other athletes or like mountain bikers or snowboarders. That is the mindset of all of them. How quickly can I get back on my horse? How quickly can I get back on the ice? How quickly can I get back on my board? How quickly can I get back on my bike? I have a national competition coming up. Like, how quickly can I do the thing? And again, like it's a hard mindset to shift. It comes back to you only have one brain. You can get a knee replacement, you can get a shoulder replacement, you can lose a friggin' spleen if you want to lose your spleen. You have one brain. And if you have a concussion, and you go back out and you get on that horse and you fall again, or you get a whiplash in some significant because something happens and you get a second concussion on top of that first concussion before that first concussion has recovered, you've just A, set yourself up for for a much longer recovery, worse symptoms, and you've also possibly put yourself in significant danger of more serious brain injury. So it's always this conversation of what is the risk versus benefit? And this conversation of do you truly understand the actual risk you're taking? We can only ever inform. And sometimes it's like we need to inform bluntly and like, this is what this looks like if you choose to take this risk, but the choice is yours because the choice is theirs. But I think sometimes people go back into that because at least in this concussion space, and I know it, is they don't actually understand the risk.
So we're kind of on that path. What is the risk of like either not managing your concussion or getting mauled? What's the long-term outlook for
So
someone?
in Canada, we have this day called Rowan's Day. And so it's kind of informing about second impact syndrome. So second impact syndrome is when you get like potential, you can die. is the short answer. So Rowan was a 17-year-old rugby player, and she experienced, I think it was by the time they started, they had like three concussions in a period of like a week or something like that. So she experienced a concussion and didn't tell anybody. She told her friends. So when they went back to it, there was like text message history of her speaking to her friends, but didn't tell her coach, didn't tell her parents, because I believe there was a big tournament coming up that she wanted to play in. And if that this story might that might be a bit wrong, but anyways, she wanted to play. And there's text messages between her and friends that were pulled up after of like, I'm dizzy and like sharing of her symptoms. But no, A, her friends didn't say anything to anybody, and she didn't share with anybody. And she went and played, and she got hit again, and she died. So that is 100% a chance because depending on the severity of the hit, depending on the severity of the concussion, depending on chemically what's happening in your brain, nerve cells can die and there can potentially, again, when you fall off a horse at the speed sometimes you guys ride, goodness gracious, like that's a significant injury. And that could be more than a mild injury as well. And if your brain is already in a place that's not in a great spot because it's already injured, you're setting yourself up for, again, that's worst case scenario. But it's still a risk that you need to know about. Secondly, let's look at when we think of concussion, I think a lot of people think of it as like, it's gone in a couple of weeks. The people that fly to see me have been on this journey for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. Years. And when you look at the symptoms of concussion, people tend to think of concussion, well, it's like I have dizziness and I have headaches and I have light sensitivity and I have like these, this is what people generally think of with concussion. But let's look at the life impacts of concussion. You can't work as much. There's financial implications. You lose relationships. I'm making this sound really bad, but I'm going to do that. I'm going to paint this bad picture right now.
Oh, God.
You can't process multiple conversations at once. So you have difficulty paying bills. You have difficulty managing the household. You have difficulty learning, reading, you can't comprehend information as much. You're at increased risk for Alzheimer's or dementia, or cognitive disease later in life. You're at increased risk for depression or anxiety, right? Like these are the worst case scenarios that happen. Now, when someone has a concussion, I always say there's silver linings. There is. But again, if you're making the decision, do I get on my horse to go ride and I just had a concussion, or do I let my brain heal and recover? Again, it's that am I taking the risk for second impact syndrome, or am I taking the risk that this could prolong my, because we know if you go back to things too quickly, you also prolong your recovery, that I'm going to live with these other symptoms for an increased length of time. How is that going to positively impact my life and my ability to show up and perform as well? So you got to ask yourself the hard questions. And it sounds like, again, I don't know your world very well, but there needs to be some very blunt conversations.
And it's so interesting that you bring it to such that harsh light, because I do feel like in the
I
mental
don't
performance,
normally.
no, it's good. It's good. It's good because people like die doing this sport. So I work primarily with eventers. So basically, like, they jump like big solid objects through a field. There's three
Okay.
phases, but the cross country is the most dangerous, and it's big solid objects, and they've done a ton of stuff to make it more safe and everything like that, but it still happens. There are things called rotational falls where a horse will actually flip on top of you, and that can result in horse and rider death. So when people come to me and they say, "I'm afraid I could die," I can't say, "Well, you're not going to die," right? And
Because it's a
no,
real thing. Yeah.
it's a thing. No one that gets on a horse can say, "I'm never going to get a concussion." In fact, most people that get on a horse can say, "I'm wearing the right helmet, I have the right equipment, I have the right horse," but freak things still happen, and concussions and traumatic brain injuries still occur. I mean, I know a very high level rider that at a walk with a helmet on had a very serious brain injury that has messed up her sight to this day. So these are what we call embracing the harsh realities, right? Of the harsh realities of the equestrian sport and the harsh realities of concussion as well. And I think it's hard to tell an 18-year-old kid that's literally put college aside to go work at a farm and gets a concussion is like, "Well, I'm here to li learn and ride, and like I just want to be in the barn learning and riding." I actually have a friend that had to, as like a supervisor, say, "You are not allowed to come to work. Like, you don't realize the long-term effects of what you're going to be going through." And that girl is lucky that my friend is like that, because a lot of the professionals are like, "Well, we need help. We need work. Like, just come back. How quickly can you get back? How quickly can you get back?" And I think people choose that time versus quality of life in other aspects, even besides brain health, right? Like in physical, "I broke my collarbone. I'm just going to ride through it because I have this big event tomorrow."
Absolutely.
So lots to unpack. Is there anything that you feel like is like an actionable thing that like someone could do, like even without seeing a concussion specialist, to like help their brain health? Like any exercises or anything that like you recommend for just across the board?
So honestly, it comes to lifestyle habits,
Okay.
right? It's not one thing, right? And I think that's where, like, there's not one thing we can do that improves brain health. It is the consistency in showing up in the things for ourselves over time that leads to better brain health. So sleep is huge, which when you're in a busy world is challenging. It literally is like, this doesn't need to be hard. It's the fundamentals. It's sleep. It's nutrition, it's movement. So we know both aerobic conditioning contributes to cognition and better blood flow and all that stuff, as well as resistance for strength. Like we need both. It's community and who you surround yourself with. Are you challenging yourself? Are you in a growth mindset? Are you continuously looking for that opportunity to learn and not become stagnant? Our brain loves novel things. Our brain loves to learn, right? This is where. And not learn by like scrolling social media necessarily, but like what new situations can we put ourselves in to challenge ourselves to then learn from that and integrate it? Travel, like all these different things in a lifestyle way, showing up for ourselves over and over and over again every single day is what's going to contribute to a better nervous system and better brain health. Are there specifics? Like when you then go into like the biohacking world, like, yeah, there's things you can do. But if you don't have the fundamentals in place, the biohacking acts like a band-aid.
I love it. Yeah. And that's exactly what like we talk about on here. So I think that's a really good synthesis. Not to like backpedal six conversations, but I was just thinking about the myth that you said about how like a you don't have to hit your head to get a concussion. So it actually is something that like will happen quite a lot of like landing on those big fences of getting like a bit of the whiplash.
Whiplash.
And like, you know, and it can happen without falling off. It can happen without like ever parting ways from the horse. Is there anything that you can say to someone who's like, oh, I'm not sure if I had a concussion? Like, what's the protocol or advice there of, hey, like, yeah, I had whiplash. I'm not sure if it's a concussion. What should I do?
Yeah, so this is where it gets a little bit tricky for sure. So whiplash can happen with as little as like 6 G's of force.
Okay.
Versus a concussion, when you read it, you need around 70 G's of force. So you do need some significant force to experience a concussion.
Okay.
And whiplash or the neck can literally mimic a zillion of the symptoms of concussion.
Interesting.
So honestly, I'm going to say the biggest thing is go see someone and get an assessment. Because if you have whiplash, you should probably get some treatment anyways. And ideally, that person could help rule in or rule out if a concussion has been experienced as well.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, no, that's super helpful because again, not the help seekers, these equestrians, but definitely just the call to action to say like, hey, you should get looked at, you should get this treated. I people aren't taking it as seriously as they could.
People need to understand the signs and symptoms of concussion too, right? So symptoms will fall into, so I talked about how there's like seven profiles of concussion. There's kind of three domains of symptoms though. There's physical symptoms, cognitive symptoms, and somatic symptoms. And so physical symptoms, the most common ones are things like dizziness, blurry vision, neck pain, balance issues, headache. Those are the biggies, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity. If you're going into cognitive symptoms, you're looking at things like memory issues, word finding issues, difficulty processing multiple conversations at once. People will just say, I feel slower. They can't really like put a finger on it, but they're like, I feel slower, or my brain feels like it's working harder, or I just don't feel like myself. And then emotionally and somatically, you're going to have things like they might be more irritable. They might be more emotional. They might be apathetic or not like be flat-faced. They might feel like they're on a roller coaster of emotions. So the symptoms kind of fall into these three bigger categories, and it's important to recognize that they don't necessarily show up right away. So if you have an incident, there's obviously our red flags. So our red flags are loss of consciousness, if there was a seizure, blurry vision is a red flag, extreme neck pain, word finding issues, memory issues, worsening of headache, losing of conscious, like continued like unconscious losing of consciousness. Those are all immediate. Any numbness, tingling, or symptoms into the extremities, those are all red flags and like emergency trip to the hospital. If those red flags aren't there, then typically what we say is you need to monitor, like they should be, if there's suspected concussion, they should be pulled, right? Because of that risk of a second concussion, like we talked about. So if there's even a suspected concussion, they should be pulled for at least the next 24 hours, and then you're monitoring for 24 hours. If red flags are going to develop, they're usually going to develop within the first 6 hours, of which that's when we're worried about things like bleeds, right? So we're worried about, is there an actual fracture? Are we worried about a brain bleed? Like, so usually those are going to develop within the first 6 hours. So you don't want to, you depend, think you want to keep the person awake for at least the first 6 hours to see if these red flags evolve. But symptoms can evolve over hours to days. So ultimately, we say you want to give someone 24 hours and monitor if these symptoms start to appear. If the concussion symptoms start to appear, then it is likely they've had a concussion. And they need to be entered into a concussion protocol. That's actually a solid question. Is does a concussion protocol even exist in the equestrian world?
I am so they have people at the event. Like, if you fall
Yeah.
off and you hit your head, like, you have to be cleared by the EMT to, like, if you had a second, if you fall off, you get eliminated. So it's not like it's like a stick and ball sport where, like, ooh, I hit my head and I'm going back to play. Like, you fell off, you hit your head, you're eliminated. But then you'll have to get cleared to go and ride other horses. But I like sometimes I'm shocked at the clearance. And I think maybe they've updated the rules even in the last couple years of like it's like immediate if you hit your head, you go out. I also do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. They're like just now coming out with rules that if you lose consciousness with a choke, like you can't continue to compete like it used to be. You could wake up and keep going in the next match. Or like, I know it's I think it's crazy the regulations that are out there that don't advocate for, hey, this is a serious thing. And then it becomes a societal level almost, because if I go and hit my head and I'm a professional and like you see me hit my head on my one horse in the morning and then you see me riding later in the afternoon, it makes it normal that you should fall off and go ride the next horse.
And I think, like, going back to, we need to support each other. And so there was a study that looked at why don't people report concussions. So it was talking to you, it's talking to adolescent, like, youth athletes. Why don't we report concussions? Fear of what my coach will say, fear of what my parents will say, fear of losing my spot on the team. Didn't know I had a concussion. It was a lot of it was that, like, fear-based of, like, and fear of not being able to then lose a spot or lose a scholarship or fear of other people's opinions. And this is one of those areas where, like, you get to be freaking selfish because you have to be. You have one brain. And if you are both a rider, especially in a, so I have a colleague, so she worked in the equestrian space and she'd talk about the 6 months of season and it was just like, holy good Dinah, like, it's intense. But again, like, are you willing to risk your brain health and the rest of your life if this is happening to, like, especially if you're in your 20s, well, any year, like, is it worth it? And I, a piece of this comes to, like, we just need better aware, we need more awareness and education. Yeah. So it would be, I think, is if that person is like, if there's any suspected concussion, they need to be pulled. And they need to be monitored for 24 hours of showing up of symptoms. They should be ruled out by, if it's, especially if it's an event, they should be, like, cleared by somebody. But then we typically say if over that 24 hours, like, there's no increasing symptoms and they've been able to do things and things are good, they're probably fine.
Yeah. I think it comes down to like valuing the next 20 years over the next 20 minutes. And like it sounds so simple when you put it like that, but people don't get it in the moment. Like they're like, oh, that next 20 minutes really matters.
You know, we always, I was just on a, I was talking with someone this morning too, and it's a concussion takes away your control. Right. And when you are, I mean, if you're a competitive athlete, like, you have goals and milestones that you are working towards, and you have likely been working towards for a very long time. Like, you've invested your blood, sweat, and tears in being able to be part of this competition, and you're striving towards something bigger always, which is amazing. And a concussion throws a wrench into your plan and it takes away your control to follow the steps the way you want to follow them. And that's hard. And I will never say that's not hard. That is hard.
It's autonomy, and that's it's what's needed in motivation. The number one theory of motivation, self-determination theory, you need autonomy, relatedness, and competence, and it kind of takes away two of the three. And all and the relatedness piece sometimes with the team too. But if you get your sense of identity through your sport, okay, now your competence piece is also taken away. So not only is it my control, but it's also my sense of doing what I need to do. I always encourage my athletes that are going through injury to reinvest some of that into their physical therapy exercises, right? Like instead of doing nothing, like be the best physical therapy patient that you can be and like really invest in doing that work. So I feel like that sort of just all ties it together in a bow.
Well, and it's that piece of too, and like you nailed it on the head, like especially as an athlete, like it's such a huge piece of your identity. And even as a professional, it's like, who are you? Oh, I'm a physical therapist. No. I didn't ask you what you do. I asked you who you are. Very different questions. But instinctively, as a society, who are you? We almost always go to what we do or what our accomplishments are. And so I think as, because I'm a mom too, so I have a 9-year-old son. And so my biggest thing as a mom right at this point is like, how do I make my son feel celebrated for who he is and who he be, not what he does? And so I think as everyone, as like professionals, as athletes, just as a general practice, it's like, who am I? If I had to strip away concussion expert, all these pieces, who am I? And I would like ask your clients that question because they will stumble because it's a hard one.
I'm giggling. I'm just connected recently with a wellness professional in my area, and she does like the nutrition, sleep, habit stuff. And
Love
we
it.
did a clinic together, and she asked a room full of equestrians, like, who are you? And they're all looking, they're like, what do you mean? Like, she said, don't say what you do, don't say anything relation to anyone else. Like, who are you? And people were like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I lead a small group. So I have a free like coaching community that I do for concussion, and then I do a small group coaching thing. And whenever we start off the small group coaching thing, I'll be like, please introduce yourself to, there's like 8 women in this group. And I'll be like, please introduce yourself and share who you are. I said, you are not allowed to say you're a concussion survivor. I'm like, you are not allowed. I'm like, I don't want to hear about your concussion. We'll get there because it is important. But who are you without your, like, it's a extremely hard question for so many people to answer because we define so much about who we are and identify so much about who we are with what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just feel like we could keep talking for hours, but I will work towards wrapping up. I would love to hear if there's any books or resources that our listeners could use to learn more about these subjects, because there are definitely a lot of avid readers that listen to this podcast.
Oh, that's a good question. So I listen to podcasts as
That's
most
great.
of my resources. So I have a podcast. If you're a podcast listener, it's called the Concussion Nerds Podcast. So it is a mix of education and all the things, because I take a very holistic approach to everything. Other books. I literally actually just went to Amazon right now just to Google. So Concussion Rescue
Okay.
is by, oh, I just absolutely blanked. It's a great book.
I can look up and link it in the
Yeah.
show
So look up
notes.
Concussion Rescue. It's by, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name right now. It is a lovely one because it does actually give you, it's written by a naturopath who works for the Amen Clinics. And so it talks about concussion. It talks about their protocol for concussion. But the cool thing is there's not a lot of research around supplements and concussion yet. But we know that inflammation is a key piece that happens. And so in this book, he's like, this would be my emergency, which why the equestrians might really like it. This would be my, like, I got a concussion. Here's what I would take to help support the healing process. And so he's got that right in the book. It's a great book. So I would do that one. The other, there's more concussion books than I realized. So cool. Can you tell I don't read them? I read research papers. So that's a good one. Also, again, being athletes as a whole, sleep is such a powerful piece in recovery. So peak sleep performance, by Dr. Shane Criado is not concussion. He does have a chapter on concussion and sleep, but he talks about how we can optimize our sleep performance, our sleep for performance. And he works with elite athletes. So, like that is what he does. And so that's a really good book. It also talks about some nutritional things and some supplemental things to help with overall health and sleep as well. There is a book called Brain Save by Dr. Titus Chu. Again, it takes a bit of a holistic approach. Yeah, those would be some of them.
Those are great. That's perfect. Yeah, I know everyone usually asks, like, what else can I do? And it's awesome to hear that you have a podcast because I'm sure that will be something that everyone will look to. So I'll make sure I link that in the show notes. And then beyond the podcast, how can our listeners, maybe someone has a like long question they've been dealing with, how can they find you?
So I am that person that really, when I say I love connecting with people, I really truly love connecting with people. I believe that in our world today, we don't value the impact of relationship enough. And so I am one of those people that like, I am the person that you see on my Instagram and I am the person in my DMs and I want to know you. So Instagram is 100% the best way to find me. I have a website. I'll give you all those links too. But Instagram is definitely the best way to connect with me because you're going to get me. And so it's at natasha.wilch. You'll recognize it when you see a redhead and a whole bunch of concussion information.
Cool.
And then I would just say, come follow me, but send me a DM and just say, hey, and let me know that you came from this podcast. And then obviously, if you have questions about yourself or a loved one, feel free to ask them. If you are interested in having me virtually, because clearly we're not in the same city, virtually speak to your group or organization about education. I don't have to be as blunt as I was on this podcast. I would be happy to talk about that with you too. But literally just reach out, send me a DM and say, hey, I found you on the pod. And like, or like, I found you on Tyler's pod and whatever, like just say hello.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can think of like six people off the top of my head that I'm like, they just need to go for like the week intensive treatment because it's just like you can tell when someone's had a few too many concussions for
It's funny, we just posted, we had, so I never share my client stories unless they ask me to share them or unless they're open with me sharing them, obviously. But one of my last clients was here. She was like, you can film the whole thing if you want. And she had miraculous. She did so good. So we actually have some reels that we just posted this last week of some crazy changes she achieved in her week with us. So, by all
Yeah, no,
means.
it's nice just knowing that it's out there, right? Like I'll have to look up what the resources are in North America and our areas, but just knowing that, like, if push comes to shove, going somewhere that's just so established and seeing such good results, it's fantastic for our community.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you wanted to share or anything you wanted to leave us?
I don't think so. I mean, honestly, this is a topic I could talk about forever.
Yeah.
I do believe that, it's one of those things that we do need increased awareness and we do need to understand those processes and knowing that there isn't necessarily one way to heal as well. But just waiting isn't going to do it. So if you do want to get back on that horse as fast as you possibly can, connect with a concussion clinician who can really support you in an integrative rehab approach.
Thank you so much for listening to this conversation. Again, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did and learned something new about concussions and brain health. As far as whole equestrian news goes, we do have Emily going overseas on a Nation Cup tour, so we'll be looking forward to hearing her recap from that adventure. We also have the whole equestrian Lake Girl retreat coming up just a month from the release date of this episode, which is fantastic. We are pretty much full. I think we have some leads for the last room that we have available. So if you're listening to this, it's probably too late to get in on that. But send us a message. If you're one of those last minute planners, we'll see what we can do to get you in. But we're gonna be having more of those in the future. And we're really looking forward to the inaugural Whole Equestrian Lake Girl Retreat. Thank you so much for listening. And in the meantime, enjoy the ride.